So here's my topic. Let's have a conversation. And why am I having this? Sometimes you need to teach what you most need to learn. So here I am, and I'm hoping that I pound this into my actions every day. I think that we live in a time right now where we really need to be having important conversations with each other. This is really a turning point in history. We've got AI that's coming on more and more every day. Billions and billions of dollars are being poured into it, a lot of energy, but it's also shaping on conversations. I don't know if you, you know, have scrolled the internet, but it watches, you know, all the algorithms keep the same things coming up, sees what you like, and for some reason I get commercials about crepe erase, and I get commercials about bras for old ladies, so I know what the internet thinks of me. But maybe, yeah, but maybe we should be having conversations about, should it really be doing that? Do we need more diversification there? Also, we live on the brink of biological engineering. And they have, there were 5 fetuses in China that were genetically engineered in the womb for a resistance to AIDS. And it worked. It worked beautifully. Should we be doing that? I don't know. But I think it's worth having a conversation with each other about what limits we think should be put on that. And it means everybody with differing opinions needs to be in the conversation so we can come up with solutions. Because all of these things are going to drastically affect our lives, our children's lives, and our grandchildren's lives. I'm hoping that this talk will help you to achieve the goal of striving together as families, as couples, as members of our church community, because we've got some conversations that need to be coming up, as members of a democracy, and as members of the human family. And avoiding conflict doesn't lead to healthy solutions. It leads to resentment and polarization. We need to start having meaningful conversations. And what I mean by that is we need to have conversations where you listen. We need to stop conceding power to people that we think maybe know more than we do, and we need to educate ourselves on the larger issues that face humanity. So here we go. Number one, and the first thing about having meaningful conversations. Set a goal. You have goals in life all the time. You set your own goals to achieve them. Set the goal for a meaningful conversation that you want to have. And maybe this is as a couple to solve a problem. I know that we set a goal when we united these two churches. And it was, we are going to unite these two churches and we're going to work through all the problems. Was it difficult? Donna, you know it was difficult. But was it worth it? Yes. Donna is in my church family and I am so thankful, so grateful. And I'm so glad that we did that. And it was difficult, but it was so worth it. Setting a goal also can surprise you, especially if you're a couple. And you want to have a conversation and you've set a goal, sometimes you get a surprise. And I should say you need to share the goal with the people you're having conversations with, okay? So if you're a couple and you want to have a conversation about having children, about how you're going to do that, you know, how we're going to save and what we want to do, and then your partner says, I never wanted to have children. You know, sometimes in setting the goal with your partner, your goal gets moved. All of a sudden, you're having a conversation about other things. But that is good. You needed, obviously, to have that conversation. So number one was set a goal. Number two is never disagree. Never disagree. If you come out, if you have a conversation with somebody and the first thing you say is, I disagree, they immediately shut off. And you're not having a conversation anymore, okay? So meaning you're, if you say you're wrong, I disagree, you're stupid, you're a communist, you're a radical left, you're a fascist, and my personal unity favorite is, you're just not as spiritually evolved. You know? Not only is that not true, it's not helpful. If you want to shut someone up, if you want to hurt their feelings, you want to have a real zinger, great, you just achieved that, that's great. But the goal, what you actually wanted, is gone. It's lost now. A healthy conflict strengthens relationships because people work together to solve a problem. Unhealthy conflict occurs when people are working against each other. So scientists have looked at the brain of scans of people that are agreeing or disagreeing while having a conversation. If people are agreeing, their brains are all lit up and they're fully aware. But when they are disagreeing, they freeze and shut down. And they do not value other people's opinions. They're not even hearing other people's opinions. Furious arguing, regardless of the evidence, does not work. So, never disagree. Which brings third one. Find common ground. This is where you have to do your homework. This is where, if you're going to have a conversation and you want to find a solution, part of it is on you. This is your job to put on your big boy pants and do the work to find common ground. Which means you've got to listen to what the other person is saying. You can introduce a rebuttal. Let them know what you agree with them with. Let them know the parts of their argument that you understand. And then if there's parts of their argument that you don't understand, ask. Ask. You want more information all the time. That's the way you get to the goal. That's the way you get to the solution. Ask. If you're just sitting there in a conversation, oh, I can't wait till they shut up and I can say what I want to say. Because my story is really, really good and I have this really good evidence. Man, I can't wait for you to shut up so I can talk. That's not doing your job. You have to stop and listen. You have to be present. It's not about how correct you are, because we all know that we are actually the ones that are correct, right? But when you find common ground, when you listen to the other person, when you tell them the parts that you agree with and ask questions, they stay open to you. They stay open to having a conversation, and they will help you be a better partner, be a better communicator, be a better salesman, a business leader, be a better person that makes solutions happen. Make sure your reply makes them feel heard. And people who are the most likely to agree with you and come to a solution are those that we agree with 90% of the time. So be one of those people. We're human. We live together. What we don't realize is that we actually do agree with each other 90% of the time. It should be easy to find that common ground. Okay, so disagree more. Disagree less. Disagree less. Understand more. Okay. Number four, it is really hard to change beliefs. And how do I know this? I was presented with an opportunity that really challenged my belief system. And could I change my belief system? We'll see. Okay, I believe that tigers are very dangerous creatures. Why? Because I own a 5-pound cat. And I have tried to give that 5-pound cat a bath. And I, needless to say, the 5-pound cat totally won. Totally won that fight. I was scratched up. Now the cat can do her own bathing. I'm not helping her out in any way, shape, or form. And I've seen a documentary where a tiger can take out a water buffalo. Right? You know? So I inherently believe that tigers are dangerous. So when my two youngest, Dyson and Mackenzie, and I went to Thailand, we had this wonderful tour guide Her name was Rose. Her name wasn't Rose, but that's what she said because Americans can understand that. So Rose, and Rose was sweet and was taking care of everything we wanted to do. And she knows, she understood right away that we want to see everything. We want it like a fire hose. And she's like, great, I've got that for you. So we're in the van that she rented with us. And she goes, you want to see Tyga? And Kenzie goes, yes. And she goes, you want to feed Tyga? And Kenzie says, yes. And Dyson said, you want to be in paddock with Tyga? And Dyson says, yes, I do. And all of a sudden, we're off to see the tigers. And I'm thinking, wow, I don't mind watching tigers. You know, there's a big fence, big fence. But she's talking about getting in. Close, in with the tigers, yes. I'm like, okay. So we pull up, and I pay the money. And for some reason, her cousin had this whole thing going on. She had a ton of cousins, and they all had their thing going on. But it was great. It was great. So we go in, and I see the baby tigers about the size of a large dog. Baby tiger. Kenzie immediately goes in. She's got the bottle. Everything's going well. I go, okay, don't need to be with her. She's fine. It's a baby tiger. She's got the bottle. They're happy, you know. So I go with Dyson because I figure if I need to, I run slower than Dyson, the tiger will get me first. And as a mother, I'm like, this will be good. And I'm sitting there, and we're watching this tiger pace back and forth, right in front of us, and his shoulders are up to here. Uh-huh. Huge. This is the biggest animal I've ever seen. It's gigantic. And he's back and forth, and I'm thinking, wow, I may not be enough to stop the tiger. He may eat me and still have time to get Tyson. And we go in there, and the guy makes the tiger lie down, and he's feeding it little bits of chicken from a stick. He's not hand feeding. He's got this long stick. He's spearing chicken and then feeding it to the tiger. He tells the tiger to lay down. The tiger lays down. And the guy goes, you give him back. You take a picture with Tyga. And I'm like, okay. And I get down on my knees, and he goes, no, come closer. Come closer to Tyga. Come closer to Tyga. So I go, eep. And he goes, no. Come closer to Tyga. You put hand on Tyga hip. I take picture. I feed Tyga chicken. So I smile, and I get up there, and put my hand on the tiger's hip. And I smile. And it was up, but it's seriously, and his head is this big. His paws were bigger than my head. It was amazing. It's a huge thing. And Dyson does his thing, and we walk out, and I said, Dyson, weren't you ever scared? And he goes, yeah, but what a way to go. You have to go. Do it that way. And I'm thinking, no, I can see my funeral right now, and Lauren Waltz is in the back, and I can hear him saying, you know, I thought she was smart, but then she got taken out by a tiger. Did my belief change? Do I believe that tigers are no longer, no, it is still there. Do I first-hand evidence? Yeah, tiger didn't kill me. It was really sweet. It was a wonderful experience. But did it change my beliefs? No. And if you go in thinking that you can change someone's basic belief systems, they're in rock, man. And they're all, you can do things to help change people's minds. There are 300,000 people in the United States that believe the world's flat. And they firmly believe that. And they're from Kansas. And so they have proof, right? They have proof. You're right. But, oh, he said, and they're from Kansas. And I've been to Kansas, and the only place that's flatter, I think, is Illinois. And that is really flat. But you are not going to change their beliefs. And you think, well, all I have to do is show them a picture from NASA. They don't trust scientists. They think that's all made up. They think all of those things are generated. They will take a basketball and say, watch this. And they'll pour a glass of water over the basketball and say, do you see any water sticking there? It's tough. The best way to try and at least get some leeway on people's deeply held beliefs is to ask questions. I'm sure all of you believe that you all know how a toilet works, right? You firmly believe I know how a toilet works. But if I asked you to write a paper and tell me in detail all of the flush mechanisms and what the little S is for, I know Peter could do that. But a lot of you, in writing down... Of course he would know that. Matt would know that. I know that. I've worked on toilets, okay? But if you haven't worked on toilets, you might have some problems. And as soon as people try to explain in detail why they believe something, sometimes they become more flexible. Well, I can't really, you know. So the key is to ask questions, a lot of questions. And when Obamacare came out, they asked people who were for Obamacare and who were against Obamacare, and they said, okay, you firmly believe, yes, I firmly believe this. Can you tell me exactly how Obamacare works, how the money is channeled from this state to this state, and exactly what you need to do with a claim and who's eligible and all of the details? And neither one of them could tell exactly what Obamacare was. You know? So the key is ask questions. Ask questions. And that is the way that you find common ground and have a chance at changing people's beliefs. Also, another reason why it's hard to change people's belief is the unity's principle. What's a unity principle? No. Thoughts held in mind produce after their kind. It's a confirmation bias. Now, actually, that unity law came out before, fundamental, came out long before the term confirmation bias. But then later, they said, oh, yeah, people have a confirmation bias. If they believe one thing, they'll see everything that agrees with it. You know? That's what's happening with the belief system. That's why they're hard to change. So if you go into a conversation going, you know, I'm going to fundamentally change what you believe. No, the best you can do is make little progress. Let's see. I have another story about confirmation bias and trying to change someone's beliefs. My husband, Marshall, is a very good author, and he's written a book, an engineering study on how to colonize the galaxy. He has a lot of detailed plans, but if you ask him, are you good at mathematics? He would tell you, I'm terrible at math. I'm absolutely the worst at math. In the meantime, in the book, he has all kinds of mathematical engineering things, and he's done a lot of the math. He's writing a book about quantum physics. He's got equations that he has done in there about orbital mechanics and time. You know, he's using all of this stuff, and he looks at me and says, I am terrible at math. Come check my math. And I'm like, Marshall, you are not. How can you say that you're terrible at math? He thinks he is terrible at math because when he was in second grade, he got an F in math. He went home and got beat for having an F in math. And it all had to do with introducing letters as a variable in math. He did not get that. He's a very literal person, right? And so when it said 2 plus X equals what? He was like, X? X is a letter. What are you talking about? Why is X in there? And then they said, the answer is 2. And so his brain, little brain, went, X is equal to 2. But then in the very next problem, it said, 6 plus X equals 12, right? And his brain went, no, you just told me X was 2. He could not, it would not calculate, and the more he got hit with that, the more stubborn he became, the more he didn't understand. And I tried to explain that variables don't, you know, can be variable. You know, you stick one in there when you don't know the answer. And then he goes, well, what about pi? Pi always equal, you know, and I'm like, oh, geez, he's right. And I, you know, so, but if you're finding that you're stuck and you want to change a belief about yourself, maybe you think, I'm bad at math. Maybe you think that I don't have confidence. Maybe you think I don't fit in this place. Not only can you use affirmations, and should you use affirmations, but you need to put yourself in that uncomfortable situation of proving it to yourself, of providing firsthand proof. So you're going to have to step out of your comfort zone and do it. If you think you're bad at math, you need to do math to change your mind. If you think you're afraid of something, like I'm afraid of tigers, okay, I'm going to get in the cage. And I'll probably get in the cage again. Lauren, you still have an opportunity to tell, I thought she was smart. It may still happen. But know that you've got to do the work. You've got to do the work. And you've got to do the work with people that you're around. So lastly, good enough is good enough. When you're having a conversation and you've agreed, don't beat a dead horse. Good enough is good enough. And some people, you're not going to agree with all the way. It's not going to be rosy, but it's going to be a solution that everybody can live with. And good enough is good enough. And those are my lessons on how to have a conversation.
Seems like our world is always in a state of crisis in one place or another, so it's nice to know that we don't have to be that way. We can choose a different route instead of just arguing. I like that. I think our job here at Unity is to figure out how to get along with each other, no matter what. So as we prepare for meditation, Tammy's going to lead us in a meditation, and we would like you to join us in singing Namaste.
deep breath in and out. I want you to feel the connection to the earth through your feet. How you are rooted there. The people around you who are also receiving energy from the earth. And at your core, you are a beautiful, shining soul that is a part of God, that is a part of the universe. And our differences are what make us beautiful. And we don't have to look like everyone else. We don't have to think like everyone else. We are beautiful just as we are. And we can flow in and out of our neighbor's energy and still be firmly rooted in who we are. And it is a beautiful thing. Thank you, God, for this wonderful community called humanity. Amen.
God in you, namaste. celebrate life. Let's give it a cheer. Let's celebrate freedom, peace, and love each day of the year. Let's run up a flag so people will know that life is great when you start living. Ready, set, go. Song. Let's sing about peace and love and freedom all the day long. Let's fire a salute so people will say it's great to be alive and living. Hip hip hooray. Great way.